Some of you guys are asking, you know, if I were to join Watermark, do I have to like country music? You do not. Okay? There's several of us that, for the greater good, tolerate it. Well, guys, we've got a really full day. We've got to make hay and get going this morning. I want to show you a picture from some. We took a little trip to, not that picture. I've seen that picture for 5 months leading up to this. Not that either. There we go. Great. So this is a photo. This is me and my family. We took a couple days, went down to the beach this summer. That's Dawson. He is our oldest. He kind of idles at about 8,000 RPMs. That's Maddie. She is the third parent in the family. Dresses up like Cinderella half the time. Bosses her two brothers around. The other half, Hudson is there. He's our little guy. He is into an Australian guys singing, dancing group called The Wiggles. If you've ever seen them, it's very disturbing the first time you see it. Just, it really is. And then that's my wife, Pam. You'll meet her in a minute. And here's what I thought about when I saw this photo. It's in our scrapbook at home. Anybody married to scrapbookers? Anybody feel my pain? Okay, good. Yeah. So we used to take vacations. We used to take family outings. We take photo ops now. Everything has a purpose and a plan to fit into one of the pages in the scrapbook, you know. And so our whole vacation is like, you know, we've got some great memories. But it's really interesting that, you know, we have a couple pages on our photo album there. There's this one. You know, there's the kids and I chasing crabs, building sandcastles, all that kind of stuff. And if you come over, we've got lots of photo albums, and we'll open them up to you, and we'll show you. And what's amazing is we're always smiling. Every one of those pictures, all throughout there, everybody's smiling, everybody's happy. But I don't know if you can see in there, there's lots of rain clouds. This was the only picture where everybody was looking at the camera and everybody was smiling. It rained half the time we were there. A lot of times we just spent indoors. We couldn't go to the beach. We came to the beach to see the beach. A lot of times we just looked at the beach from our balcony. When we went into our hotel room, it was a classic, like, I mean, that's not this place, you know. It was a bait and switch. It wasn't what we thought. What angle was this taken from, you know? If a little boy ingests, you know, 5 gallons of salt water, it will come up at 2 o'clock in the morning. It will. And, you know, our little guy at the time, he knew two words, done and, what was it, done and, that may have been it, just done. And so we go to eat dinner, and we order our drinks, and he starts screaming at the top of his lungs, done, done, done. You know, so that blew our perfect, you know, family meal, but that's the photo that we show, right? And guys, here's the deal. In our photo albums of our lives, of our marriages, we all try and portray this right here. And that's what a lot of us were showing last night. Hey, you smiling? I'm smiling. We're laughing. You know, here comes the jokes on sex. I mean, let's laugh. Everyone else is laughing. Some of us haven't, you know, partaken of that in a long time. Some of us have thought of that. It just repulses us. But let's laugh. Let's show this picture. And there's a lot of other stuff in our photo albums, or just that are on the, that were exposed on that roll that we don't show anyone. And what I want you to know today is that wherever you are, you're here, God's got you here, and you're at a good place. And I went to bed last night, and my heart was heavy. I was thinking about, you know, just some of the exposures that I can imagine that are in, you know, here in this room. And at the end of it, I went to bed with some peace. And I thought about what Jesus said, that those who mourn are blessed because God will comfort them. And I got to thinking about, if this whole marriage thing is God's idea, if oneness is his design and his goal, then he is for you and he wants to help you. He knows all the exposures that are there in our life. He sees those. But since he has the ideal of oneness set out, since he designed it and created it, he wants to help us get there. He wants to help us when more oftentimes than that authentically we're smiling and that really is who we are. Okay? So a lot of times the church, that's the pictures, those are the only photos we allow.
And what's great about this place here at Watermark is that no matter where you are, whatever your exposures are, someone else has got that story. Someone else has recovered. Someone else has experienced God's grace, and they can comfort you with the same grace that they've received, okay? So a lot of you, you know, this is kind of your first time here, and you might not know that. I want you to know this is a safe place where you can be kind of whoever you are. And so after this marriage conference, after you're all amped up and you're gonna go have the greatest marriage ever, write books, and it doesn't work out that way at the end, would love to hear from you. We'd love to walk with you through that. Okay, great. Well, I'm charged with communication this morning in the few minutes that we have left, and we can get some good stuff done here. A couple reasons I'm passionate about this. Number one, the inability to resolve conflict is it is the number one predictor of divorce. So if you can't resolve conflict, you've got an incredible opportunity, a chance, percentage that you are going to end up divorced. It's just bottom line. And what's amazing is that a lot of couples, there's this group, and what they do is they take early married couples first in their first year, they hook these little electrodes up to them and they videotape them, and they just watch them dialogue. And based purely on the way that they watch them communicate and dialogue, they can predict within 85 to 87% if this couple will be married in 4 to 6 years. Amazing. Nothing to do with education, nothing to do with family of origin, with how much money they have, any of that. All it is the way they communicate. And they can go, these guys are doomed, or these guys will probably make it. And then secondly, the reason I think that I'm so passionate about that is just what I've seen communication do in my own marriage. And so the first half I would characterize as of our marriage was good, I thought. The last half has been great. And I liken it to a guy who had only eaten bologna sandwiches for dinner growing up, or as in his married life. He came home, he walked in the door, "Hi, honey, what's for dinner?" "Bologna sandwich." "Yes." You know, and he sat down, and his wife served him bologna sandwich, and he started chowing down. "Honey, this was a great bologna sandwich. Thank you so much. Can't wait till the next night we get to eat bologna again. This is awesome." And then one night he walks in, for some reason he doesn't know, he doesn't understand. His wife pulls off of the grill a great big, juicy, sizzling ribeye and sits it down. He's perplexed. He's never seen a ribeye. He doesn't know. He cuts in, he puts it in his mouth, and can you taste it right there? I can taste it this morning a lot better than the bacon. And it's melting in his mouth, and he has two thoughts. "Whoa, I really, really like ribeye." Second thought is, "I hate bologna." "I don't ever want bologna again." And I would say for the first half of our marriage, Pam and I thought we were just chowing down. It's great. And we were eating bologna compared to what we've had on the second half, the second run that we've had here. And it's based primarily on communication, the way we've been able to dialogue with each other, build trust and intimacy. Okay? So I want to give you... two verses, four negative patterns we can watch out for, and then one image. Okay? First verse here. James 1:19. "But let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." What a great verse. If you had a marriage conference that's actually just half the verse, in a half verse, that's it, right there. Communication class in one verse. If we will do this, we will be great communicators. We will build intimacy. We will build oneness with our spouse. And I take it there that the goal of communication is to seek to understand, because the things we're supposed to do are listen before we are to speak and get angry. And I take it that if we were to get the point of communication was to get our point across, that it would read exactly the opposite, that we should be quick to speak, we should be quick to get angry, and then at the end we should kind of see if they heard us. That's not the way it reads. But in communication, our first and number one priority is to listen, is to seek to understand our spouse. And a lot of you guys do it beautifully in work. And I've seen you, I've sat with you at lunch, and you're trying to sell me, you know, something, and you're listening, you know. And we get home, and all we do is talk. We don't listen at all to our spouses. And a lot of you guys have training in sales and things like that. You're great listeners, just when you get paid for it, not when you're home with your spouse, okay? So that is our charge. We'll talk a little bit more about how to do that. But secondly, James 4:1, what a great verse. "The main reason we don't communicate well is because we're selfish." James 4:1. "Where do you think all these appalling wars and quarrels come from? Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way and fight for it deep inside yourself. That little MSG is from the Message Bible. We're proud to be a MSG-free conference here. So, it is selfishness. That is the reason we fight. And a lot of times we get confused. We think we fight because we have kids, you know, and they're just going crazy and everybody's yelling, or there's pressures at work, or we have no margin left in our finances, you know. Those aren't the reasons we fight. We fight because down deep in our hearts, we're selfish. We want what we want. And we do whatever we can to get that. And that's why we fight hunting season. I love it, you know. Man, he's hunting again. He's out at the lease, yada, 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 you know. And we're fighting. Your problem is not that your husband likes to blow up poor defenseless birds. That's not it. The problem is that you're selfish and that he's selfish. And he wants his own way. You want your own way. And that you fight because down deep in your heart, although some of you guys are Christ followers, Christ has made your heart new, he still has more ground to take. And there's still parts of us that are selfish. I don't guess I understood this the first half of my marriage. But if we can deal with the selfishness of our own hearts and we can listen to our spouse, we can communicate well. Okay? I want to bring my wife up here. This is Pam. Pam is pregnant with our fourth. 8 months. You can catch your breakout later. Where's the control and birth control? We'll be co-leading that together. Quick story. Pam and I were high school sweethearts. We started dating in high school. Dated all through college, and right before our senior year, I just kind of got cold feet. You know, I was like, I don't know if we want to go through this, if I want to get married, you know, constricting, yada, yada, yada. So we just kind of parted ways. We were still friends. We'd go out and hang out and stuff. Well, she starts, yeah, she says, no, I just had eyes for you. I was just, you know, I was all about you. It was really hard to tell at the time because she was having fun with all these other guys. One of these guys, Bart Millard, you know, another evil guy with a guitar, right? You know, he's this lead singer for Mercy Me, you know? And so, he's writing Pam these songs, you know, and he's like, oh, listen to this. Yeah, that's great, honey. And I don't know if you guys know, but he wrote Ike's Song of the Year or something like that, you know, a little thing, Song of the Year, Album of the Year, I'm not sure what he got, you know. And once I found out that Bart was interested and they were just hanging out, she said, man, it drove me nuts. And, I picked out a ring and I just, poof, I put it on her, over here. Will you marry me, please? You know, I don't want to let Bart get you. So he got, Bart got Song of the Year, but I got the girl. So I'm happy about the way that worked out. Okay, I want to talk about real quick some of the four patterns that we can watch out for in our marriage. Four ways that we communicate poorly. First one, the W is withdrawal. Withdrawal and avoidance, and that is the unwillingness to get in or stay with important discussions. And a lot of times, we will physically get up and leave a conversation. If it gets too heated, if we're not going to win, and it's not safe, we'll check out and physically get up and leave the room. Or we can emotionally withdraw. We can just go, forget it. I mean, I'm not going there. Just whatever. I'll give in. I'll withdraw. And just so we can make peace and be done kind of with this thing.
This has played out on occasion at our house if I really have an agenda and want something to happen, even been known to nag a little bit maybe, and I just keep pushing John, and then I'll see him give in just to really get me off his back. He may leave the room or just kind of, like he said, shut down, just so I'll leave it alone.
You know, and I think I still do, but definitely early on, if I knew there was going to be conflict, man, I would just, you know, it was like that little Monty Python, you know, that run away, run away. And that's kind of what I thought the alarm bells would go off, and I just didn't want to do that. And I would find myself just really withdrawing. And so a lot of times it'll happen. You'll have somebody, it's called a pursuer-withdrawer cycle. You'll have somebody in the marriage
who's kind of pursuing, you know, a conversation or wants to really talk about issues, and you got the one person who's, you know, Monty Python is running away from it. And it creates this cycle where you go, well, I really want to talk about this. I care about a relationship. But it doesn't seem like he does, and he's going, whoever. But she's just nagging me. She won't leave me alone. Yada, yada, yada. All she wants to do is talk. I just, you know, can't I have a minute? Like some of this stuff here on the skit. And so you need to figure out ways that you can exit that cycle, because it keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. The pursue withdrawal. You want to keep your eyes out, open for it, and then if that's you, you want to look for ways to exit that. I think one of the biggest ones is just to make sure that it's safe, that your partner feels safe, that they can talk to you, and they know they're not going to get blasted. They know that it's that you will listen, that you will seek to understand them.
The next negative pattern is escalation, and that's just when partners respond negatively toward each other. They just continue to up the ante as it becomes more and more hostile.
When we teach a communication class, we'll teach the next one in April. If you guys are interested, you can come and we'll talk some more about this. But there's some great video clips, real live footage of couples arguing. And there's this one couple, they're sitting down at the table, and he's hacked off about the state of the kitchen. There's crumbs on the table. So they start fighting about crumbs. Literally crumbs on the table, and they keep lobbing these missiles at each other, and the insults keep getting worse and worse and worse. And at the end of this deal, it cuts to them. They're talking about getting a divorce and who's going to have the kids. No kidding. I mean, you know, visitation rights, all this stuff, and it started with crumbs. And a lot of times, because we won't let our spouse have the last word, we up the stakes, or we're going to get one more thing in. We can't just not let them be right, or let them have the last word. We, deep inside of us, we escalate and we continue to raise the stakes.
And you do probably think escalation, yelling, screaming, and that does play out that way a lot. More for us, it's a little more subtle. When we escalate, it's kind of sideways jabs, sarcastic comments. Like you said, just got to get one more jab in before I leave the room. And that's how it plays out for us when we escalate. Two Christmases ago, we just come home from 3 or 4 days at the in-laws. Everybody's in the same room. You know with kids how that is, not much sleeping going on. We were really tired, and we just had a couple of days left till school started and work started, and we were in the kitchen, and this is the exit strategy. Somebody just has to step up and be humble and say, we've got to stop. And John just said, what are we doing? Everything we've said is sarcastic, not encouraging, just kind of sideways jabs at each other. And he said, let's just make the next 2 days a little more fun and just exit this. And again, that's what it takes, just somebody to have the humility to stand up and say, we're both doing it, we've got to stop.
That's what I always do, right?
Right,
yeah,
right.
That's good.
Right.
But I hope that makes sense, that if you find yourself in conversations and you're talking about, you know, toothpaste, where you squeeze it, and that all of a sudden, you know, her mom gets brought into the picture, and, you know, all this other stuff, you know, people they dated, then that's alarm bells should be going off there. That's escalating, okay? So a lot of times you have guys who withdraw and girls who escalate, and if that is you, this is what it looks like here. Yeah. Across the board. Isn't that funny? Good. So that is escalation. The next one is negative interpretation. When someone believes that the motives of the other person are more negative than is really the case.
And often this plays out with people in areas where they're insecure. So I'm not a horrible cook, but I'm not great. So I'm a little insecure in that area. When John walks in, hey, honey, what's for dinner? So what I hear, or can hear, if I'm negatively interpreting, is, gosh, I hope we ordered pizza because it was really bad the last few nights. And he just really wants to know, hey, what's for dinner? I'm hungry. Or a classic one with us, how are the kids today? He just wants to know how the kids were. Well, if I'd had a really rough day, lost my patience a little bit, then what I'm hearing is, in the 9 hours I've been gone, have you destroyed our children's lives? And that really comes from grew up with great godly parents, but there was oftentimes a kind of a hidden agenda to what was said. There was an underlying meaning, negative or positive, there just was kind of an underlying something going on there. And so I really brought that into our marriage, and that's definitely my pitfall, is just to negatively interpret what John's saying. But I'm not the only one that does it. John has a great story. He's been known to do it.
Yeah, we bought our house a couple years ago, and I was home just working while I was working hard, day and night, waking up early, going to bed late, trying to be super dad, play with the kids, you know, super husband, and also just get this house ready. And so we order all these blinds. I'm going to do them myself. Seemed brilliant and conceptually, you know, until they were there and I had to do it. And I'm hanging the first one, these little wood blinds, and I'm not the most, the handy guy, Bob Vila, you know, he seems like he's lost my phone number. He's not calling me, you know, to help me out. And so it's a kind of a struggle. I'm in there and I'm hanging it, but I think I got the first one. And Pam walks in. She doesn't even say anything. Here's the deal. You don't have to say anything to get a negative interpretation. It can be a look, some body language, or just something you think they're thinking and you don't even know. And she walks in and she just looks at the blinds and they're up there, and she kind of cocks her head and she goes, like that. And then she walks over to, this closet right where I'm working. And you know the closet when you move in, where does that go? I just put it in the closet, you know. It was that closet. It was just boxes and all kinds of random stuff. She opens it up and looks in there and she goes, whoa, and closes it. And then she thinks of something else and she walks out. So I'm sitting there and I'm sweating, I'm tired, and I'm hanging these blinds. And here really is kind of, as I process that through my mind, she's going, those blinds look horrible. You know, you can't do anything mechanically around the house. You're totally inept. And not only are you inept, you're lazy because you haven't even gotten to this closet here. And it's a big mess. You know, what are you doing all day kind of stuff? And that is really, honestly, it's hilarious now. That's what I heard. And so I just kind of started reacting to what I thought she said. So the rest of the night, you know, I'm hanging these blinds and I'm hacked off. And you know, she's ungrateful. I'm sitting here helping her, you know, I'll show her, you know, kind of stuff. And that was like 2 hours to that. So somewhere between the, you know, kind of taking a shower and hopping in bed, kind of closing down the night, God in His graciousness, His Holy Spirit shows me that I don't know that Pam said that, you know. And so I got to thinking about, did she even say anything about that? Did she even say, you know, I was lazy or I was inept? No. And so I was like, oh, God, you know, forgive me. And so I asked Pam, hey, Pam, what'd you think of the blinds? Ah, it looked fine. How about the closet? Oh, it's a mess, but I mean, we'll get to that at some point. Well, forgive me for kind of being a jerk around the house, you know, here this last couple hours. And so we missed out on 2 hours of, you know, oneness that we could have had in our marriage. And lucky enough, we caught it, we dealt with it, and I asked for forgiveness, just kind of, you know, being a dork. And I wonder how many times conversations get cut off because we have a negative interpretation right off the beginning, and we go, ah, forget it. They don't care about me. They don't love me. They're not going to listen to me anyway, or I know what they're thinking. You know, truth of the matter is often we don't, and we need to give each other the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and just the negative, or the, excuse me, the exit strategy for that is just believing the best about your partner, which is sometimes hard to do. But just when John walks in, or this is a funny one for us, when we're driving in the car a few minutes late, and John just, these under the breath late comments, looking at his watch, just to believe that he's just really frustrated that we're a little bit late. But if I'm not sure, just to say, are you frustrated or are you really angry at me? You just want me to know that it was because I changed my clothes 3 times and was working on my hair that we were late. And so again, just ask for clarification if you really can't believe the best about your partner. And we have, on occasion, I've asked him and he's been, no, that's all I meant. What is for dinner? I'm hungry. But there have been times that he's had to ask, and I've as well had to ask for forgiveness. No, I was really trying to get in a jab.
That's good. Yeah, so that's negative interpretation. The way to combat that is to believe the best. If you don't, if you can't believe the best, then you ask for clarification. Okay? So last one is invalidation, and this is subtle or direct put-downs. Either, you know, putting down their thoughts, their feelings, character, of the other person. And so this is my classic. This is where I excel. You know, so Pam early on would share, hey, this is how I'm feeling. I'd go, well, that's a dumb way to feel. You know, don't feel that, you know. And she'd share an idea, and I'd go, well, you just don't understand. Let me explain it to you. And I would invalidate everything she'd kind of say just so I could be right. I thought that was a goal of communication. Instead of trying to listen to her and understand her, I would try just to be right.
You know, it's frustrating. I would come to John with just a legitimate, just something I wanted to talk about or just the way I was feeling, and I would end up leaving 10 minutes later apologizing that I even came to him in the first place. So it made me feel like it wasn't safe for me to share things with him.
Yeah, that's right. So that is invalidation. You want to, if that is you, and you, everything inside of you is screaming to be right, to put them down, you want to keep that in check, and you want to know that your heart is selfish, and you want to be aware of that, and seek to create a safe place in your marriage, okay? So it was withdrawal, escalation, negative interpretation, and invalidation. If you look down there, W-E-N-I, they put those together, they spell weenie, okay? It's a good way to remember it. So, you know, you can say, hey, you know, you're talking here, quit being a weenie, okay? And a lot of times just having those categories, just knowing what it is, what is our dysfunction, will really help us attack it. You know, couples go, we can't communicate well. We'll never communicate well. If they have some pegs and some things to look out for, a lot of times they can fix that, they can self-diagnose, and they can be aware of that, okay? I want to show you one couple that we met a few years ago, and they're going to share some of their story, and then we'll wrap up.
I think that, you know, the advice you get from friends and family and things of that nature is that the first year of marriage is the best year ever. And we're like, oh my gosh, what are we doing wrong? Because our first 6 months, we could like barely stand to be in the same room. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was like, why is this so hard? We constantly felt like we were being put in the fire.
We'll say the first 6 months is a tumultuous time where, you know, it's a lot of, well, I need this, and oh, I need this, I need this, I need this, and then the sort of back and forth, I guess, that goes along with that. And there was a particular instance where I was going to pick her up at the airport, and I was at the airport, but I wasn't at the gate yet, so I call her, and I'm like, you know, how are you doing, you know, and she's like, where are you, and I was like, well, I'm at home, like, just, you know, kidding around, joking around. I thought it was funny. Well, she got really upset.
I see my coworker get picked up by her boyfriend with flowers, and he's at their gate waiting for her, and I call my husband, and he's late, and I'm upset, and, you know, I haven't seen him in 4 days. I had a horrible business trip.
You know, then we're just yelling at each other. I don't really totally remember what we're yelling about, but...
just lots of yelling.
We're just, like, just yelling. And I'm upset, and she's upset. I was just joking around. I didn't realize. I was at the airport. You know, what did I do wrong?
What I wanted was for my husband to be there, not with flowers, but to pick me up and be like, you know, I missed you. How was your trip? All of a sudden, I had these expectations of, how come you weren't here waiting for me? Didn't you miss me? You know, like, that was my immediate expectation was, you know, well, if he wasn't here on time, then he obviously didn't miss me at all. And so that anger, I think, just manifested so quickly because I equated him joking around and not being on time with he didn't miss me at all. And so I think that was like the first aha of we have communication problems. One of the things that we still practice to this day is speaker-listener.
Speaker-listener technique is kind of it's an odd, sort of uncomfortable technique. It's not the coolest or the best way to do things, but the fact that it is so uncomfortable that it just sort of twist the conversation so that you really can't do what you normally would do, and so you have to like really think about things. And it's not necessarily technique, but it's how you communicate. It's the fact that you're having to think about talking rather than just throwing out nonsense.
Rather than me being so quick to judge and quick to yell, I need to listen to what Adam is saying and hear exactly what he's saying, because sometimes when I and listening to him, I don't really hear him. And I'm very quick to be right, and he's very quick to be right, and so we butt heads a lot. And the speaker-listener just kind of taught us to slow down.
It's no longer my point. It's more like, okay, where does she stand, and how do I integrate that with how I feel, and how do we mesh these two things? People that are getting married later on, you're spending, you know, 20 some odd years of your life where you're only thinking about yourself. And so now to be put in a situation where you have to think, you have to put another person first. And I think, you know, what's at the heart of this communication issue is that it's not just about you anymore. And so speaker listener is about, okay, I'm going to put somebody else first. And that's, I think it was what is at the heart of it. We're together now, I think, in this, whereas before, we were sort of like, you know, iron sharpens iron. I feel like, you know, there's still those times, but it's not necessarily a battle. It's more like in a loving way, iron sharpens iron, I guess. And that's how I see us going forward in the future.
Those guys are here September conference. But when we first met them, you know, they're sitting there, hey guys, what's the problem? And they're both going like, you know, at each other, like, that's the problem right over there. And they've done a great job. Just practice, speaker listener essentially is James 1:19. It is listening to each other first, seeing if you can understand, you know, and then helping them paraphrase it back. Is this what you said? Let me see if I got that. Okay, great. And then moving forward. And when that's the goal and that's the end zone, it changes everything in communication. Okay. I want to give you one last image. I love this quote. See on the next page. One of our best wedding gifts God gave you was a full-length mirror called your spouse. Had there been a card attached, it would have said, here's to helping you discover what you really like. Isn't that a great quote? Your spouse in communication, if you will let them, if you'll create a safe environment where they can speak and they can share honestly, you know, create a safe atmosphere. They can show you things about you that are true, that hurt, but are from God. If you'll have that kind of intimacy, culture, and trust in your relationship. And a lot of times we don't want to see what we're really like. We don't want to see what's in that mirror, what our spouse will tell us if we were to ask. And so we pull all these other tricks out so we can't ever get there. We can't ever go to any kind of deep levels of intimacy where they might show us something. And I tell you guys, the first, you know, I'm recovering, but the first 5 years of our marriage, I was so arrogant and so prideful. And Pam graciously would go, it's what you look like. It's who you are. I know you think you're not, but let me just tell you, no one else is telling you this. Your friends aren't. Either they can't see it or they're not willing to, but this is what you really like. And I chafed against that. And I'm learning now to embrace that and to see that that is from God. And that's part of what we do when we communicate. We're able to just kind of air grievances and help each other out. I see this in you. Let's talk about that. And if you welcome that, that is a great gift that God will give you. He'll give you His Word. He'll give you His Spirit. But He can also use your spouse to make you more like Himself. And that is a great gift. Want to let you know, after the fact, here after the conference in April, we're going to have a marriage conference. It's a communication conference. One day on a Saturday, April 30th is the date. If there's anything else I can do for you after the fact, that is part of the way that I get to serve this body, is in this whole marriage area. So don't be shy. Pick up the phone, call me, lob me an email, and if I don't have that story or I can't relate, I can find someone who can. Wherever you are, there's someone here in our body that would love to walk with you through that, okay? So don't be a weenie. Pursue oneness, create safe environments, and deal with your own selfishness in our hearts, okay? We're going to have a great, great day.